This seminar by Dave Wilcox and Ken Bohr, titled Running an Effective and Peaceful Sunday Morning Rehearsal, is made available to you through Sovereign Grace Ministries. It was recorded at our Worship God 2008 conference. Dave serves as technical director, and Ken serves as director of music at Covenant Life Church in Gaithersburg, Maryland.
Let's just pray as we begin. Father, I thank you for the unmerited favor we have with you through Jesus Christ. Thank you for sending your Son. Thank you that you've made us a part of your church. We are a part of your family. And you have saved us so that we can serve your purposes and find joy in doing so. And I thank you, Lord, that each of these people has the joy of doing it with the gathered congregation every Sunday. Lord, what a privilege this is. And so, Lord, I thank you for that, and I just pray that we would feel your nearness and your kindness, even as we think about these things, think about very practical things. But these are things that you care about because you care about your church. So, Lord, would you help us as we think about Sunday meetings and Sunday rehearsals? We pray for your blessing. Help me to speak clearly, and I pray that it would be useful to everyone here. In Jesus' name, amen. My name is Ken Bohr. I am a director of music here at Covenant Life Church. I serve alongside Bob Coughlin in overseeing the worship team and developing musicians and in planning Sunday meetings here at the church. Dave Wilcox is here in the front row. And Dave Wilcox is our technical director at the church, and he oversees the sound and video and lighting teams, as well as just a whole myriad of things, and leads an army of volunteers doing that. So we're going to be jumping kind of back and forth with each other as we're going through this. One of the main points that we're going to be making is how this ineffective Sunday rehearsal is really a marriage between the two parties of the worship team and the sound team. And in a good marriage, it takes a little while for things to be worked out of what everybody's role is and how do we make this thing work. And that's a lot of times what we need to figure out in our own churches. So that's what we're going to be spending time doing. So does everyone have an outline? It was all on your chairs? Good. Our purpose, just to pan back for Sunday rehearsals, our purpose for the rehearsal is that the rehearsal serves the Sunday meeting. Our aim is to assist the gathered church as it magnifies the greatness of God in Jesus Christ through song and the preached word. So we want to do our rehearsals well because we're preparing to serve the gathered church. The church gathers on a Sunday once a week. This is when God's saints are gathered together. Don't miss the connection that what you do in your rehearsal is serving the rest of the church when they gather. Point B, the more effective the rehearsal, the more effectively the musical team and technical teams can use their gifts to serve in the Sunday meeting. We want to serve in an undistracting way. You know what distractions are in a Sunday meeting, when there's a problem with a microphone, when, you know, the drummer comes in with the wrong timing. You know what those distractions are. Our rehearsals help us to serve in an undistracting way. And it helps us to serve with excellence, because God does care about excellence. He does want us to do the things that we do well for the honor and glory of His name, so that it serves the members of our congregation. You just know how much you love it when you're singing a song and it just feels right, and it just makes you, encourages you to sing, and you just love singing this truth. The rehearsals serve that. And then also, doing a rehearsal well helps us enter the Sunday meeting with joy and faith and peace. And our joy and our faith and our peace do not depend on a good rehearsal. Even as we heard yesterday, after you do all your preparation, take a moment and make sure your team is praying together, and just settle your heart and say, this is what happened in our rehearsal, but what happens in this meeting is not dependent upon merely what happened in this rehearsal. We're the gathered church. It's not dependent on how cool it is musically or how good it sounds. God is here. He's here to meet us. He's bought us with His own blood. His Spirit is here. We're going to hear His word. God is going to be active. And let your heart rest in that and not in your preparation, because that changes everything about your perspective. And that's what the members of your church need to hear and need to celebrate. You want to build people into the truth, build them into experiencing God and not into experiencing your musical excellence. So what we want to do first, later in this seminar, we're going to spend some time just talking through what we do here at this church in terms of our rehearsals. And we hope that you'll be able to take away a few things that will serve you in the process of the rehearsal. Every church is different, and the way that we came upon what we're doing has only been through a process of saying, oh, that didn't work, what about this? And every team is different, both in terms of the musicians that you have and the who you have to be able to put things together for sound. But before we jump into those things, I want to look at some of the common problems in our rehearsals. A good doctor diagnoses the problem first and then finds the solution. So as you're in this seminar, I want you to think about very specifically, if you could list just a few things, what do you think are the things that are hindering you most in your rehearsals each week as you get together? Pinpoint those, think about those, think about what questions you want to ask about those, and then hopefully we'll address some of those throughout the seminar, and then we'll be able to talk about some of them in the Q&A at the end. So, common problems. Point A, different goals for the musical team and the technical team. The worship team, when it comes in, and when I use the word technical team, I'm talking about the sound team, but it could involve any other elements of, you know, projection or whatever you're doing. The worship team comes in, you got a bunch of people who love to sing, they love to play, they just want everything to work. You know, just let me hear my monitor, I just want to praise the Lord, let's just make music. And they're not thinking about all the details that need to go into making that all work. And then you have the sound team who are thinking about, okay, what input was that mic supposed to go into, and why is this feedback happening, and oh wait, that was the wrong slide, and oh, they didn't tell us that this was happening this morning. So there's a war of two worlds happening, and usually it's happening within a very short time frame right before the Sunday meeting. You may do your rehearsal sometime earlier during the week. We're going to be focusing here just specifically on what's that time when you're getting everything ready kind of finally for your meeting, and all these elements need to work together. So, yeah, just recognize that there's different goals going on here, and do what you can to prepare your team to know that all these different things need to go on. The guitar player may not be aware that if he's 10 minutes late, it means that he can't get, the tech team can't get his input right away, which means that therefore they're going to have to do something else later. Everybody needs to understand a lot has to happen in this time, and you need to play your part to contribute to the whole. Another common problem in rehearsals, lack of leadership and planning. And I've been a chief offender in this so many times, where if I'm planning a rehearsal, I may think, you know, kind of broadly about, yeah, I want that song to go here, and maybe we'll kind of do this instrumentation-wise. But then I get to rehearsal, and I'm like, oh, they need to know, like, play on verse 2 and not on verse 3. And they need to know, like, oh, they want to know, like, maybe how many times we'll possibly repeat the chorus at the end. And they like, want to know a cue for that. And, oh, wait, if we're going to that other section, what chord do we play? All those kinds of things. A lack of planning on the leader's part can really impact the rehearsal. So if you can take, you know, a short amount of time and do that as a leader, we'll just multiply that across the time and investment that everybody else in the team is making. Your small investment can make a big difference in what you spend your time in the rehearsal. Another common problem in rehearsals, a lack of communication. This could be communication to those on the sound team or the worship team, or the sound team and the worship team talking together. Very often we can come in with an idea of how we want the rehearsal to go, and then we're frustrated when the rehearsal doesn't go the way we want it to go, except we forgot that we never told the people who are in the rehearsal that we want it to go this way and not the way they've always done it. So just think, what do I want about rehearsal? And have I communicated to the members on my team in a gracious and humble way and help them see the goal for why we're doing this? Have I communicated to them clearly the goals that we have for this rehearsal? Now, common temptations to sin. We want to address this in our rehearsal. We sin all the time. And the sin that is coming out of our lives is not caused by the things that are happening to us. The sin that is in our lives is happening because we have sinful hearts. Though we've been saved by a gracious Savior, we have not perfectly yet been made whole. And so when we're in particular situations, that sin is going to come out. Now, rehearsals are a wonderful time for God to just kind of put his finger on different things, because there's a little bit of heat going on. You're doing this with other people. You need to get it ready. And you're trying to depend on other people, and you're not sure if you've got your own part. So there's common temptations in rehearsals. Now, one thing that's made a big difference for me, I came to Covenant Life 4 years ago, and one thing that I saw Bob Coughlin do with the worship team here was he spent time preparing the worship team for the common temptations that would happen to them in this particular situation. It's not that musicians are... musicians may be of a certain temperament, or technical people may be of a certain temperament, but the sin that comes out is sin. And when you're in a particular situation, you might be given toward sinning in a particular way. So what we want to do is prepare ourselves, prepare our own hearts, and prepare our teams and say, okay, you're going to be in this situation. I know you're going to be in this situation. You're going to be tempted to sinfully respond in this way. But we don't want to sinfully respond in this way. In fact, we're a worship team, which means that we worship God, and we don't worship ourselves and our own preferences and the way we want things to go. So let's talk about what this could look like when these temptations come. So let's look at some of these possible temptations, see if you can identify with any of these in your own heart or from rehearsals. Anxiety. Have you ever had anxiety in a rehearsal before? This is never going to come together. We're just not playing together. This just doesn't sound good. Is this going to bless anybody? Okay, you can feel that way. And so in that, we want to address our hearts. Fear of man. This is another just common temptation for anybody who's participating on stage, especially if you're new participating on stage on a Sunday morning. You're tempted to think, I've been working on this. Oh, wait, you mean in 15 minutes I need to play this in front of everybody and they're all going to hear it? And what are they going to think? Impatience. I need my monitor now. Selfishness. It's okay if I'm a little late to rehearsal. I mean, other people come late and it seems like we get by, and yeah, it's okay. It won't impact anybody else. Sloth. What I'm working on right now is more fun. I really want to get this part together rather than working on the thing that really needs to be worked on to make the meeting effective. Discontentment and self-pity. Lord, why do we have a sound system that always breaks? So just recognize these temptations are going to be coming, and do what you can to prepare in advance. I'd encourage you to do this outside of a rehearsal sometime, or take a rehearsal and just talk to your team about what these temptations are and say, okay, we want to make the rehearsals as effective as we can, but they're only going to be as effective as we're able. We really want to address our hearts in this as well. So make sure you take the time to do that. And point out not only what you don't want to do, but point out what you do want to do. Instead of unbelief, instead of anxiety, point to trust. Instead of fear of man, point to, look, we're here to serve God. This is his people. Another common problem in rehearsal, lack of focus. A lot of times we can be more interested in hanging out, having fun. This is my place to jam, than rehearsing to serve the congregation. Or it could be equipment problems or unskilled use of equipment. So turn to the next page. We're actually going to jump down. I've already hit some of these. So where it's B.3, where it says highlight where God is at work. One thing you can do to address your team is to not only to talk about what those who are rehearsing effectively or serving on the team effectively, commend them in front of other people. It's good for us not to build up their pride in any way. We don't want them to be proud of themselves for doing something. But if somebody is particularly humble on the team, if somebody is particularly punctual on the team, if somebody has been rehearsing hard on their own so that when they come to rehearsal, we don't need to spend as much time on it, but they've got their part ready. If somebody's doing that, commend them and encourage them for that and point that out to other members on the team and say, that is exactly what we're aiming to do. And it does a couple things. The main thing it does is it just motivates other people on the team to say, I want to be like that. And in a grace-oriented way, rather than a guilt-oriented way, you can head off a lot of problems by just reinforcing the values that you want people to have. So do what you can to point out where those good things are happening, and then point to that person and say, yeah, we want to do this. And then last, seek your pastor's counsel. If there are particular things that are going on in your rehearsal where there's a member of your team who plays everything 70s rock, and there's another member of your team who plays everything like Switchfoot, and there's a vocalist who seems to always want things to go a particular way, recognize that there are musical things going on there, but there are also heart things going on there. We never want to miss that. Don't miss that. If you really feel as the leader that something would most effectively serve the congregation, and make sure you're not doing this just based on your own preferences, but you think for us to work together as a whole, we need to do this, do seek to address those issues. It may be that somebody just needs help growing stylistically, or it may be that they are proud and they're resistant to change, and you want to gently and lovingly say, you know what, I think for us to really function best together as a team, I think we really do want to go in this direction. And I'm not saying that in any way to denigrate your musical preferences, but I do feel at times that sometimes you may be responding just because you don't like it, or I just want to encourage you to see a way that you can be serving the whole team. So if there are problems in your rehearsals like that, definitely be seeking to address that. And if you don't feel like you're equipped to address that, then seek your pastor's counsel. Because a pastor's job is to know what biblical truth is and to proclaim it and to help people live it. And it means that all of us, and recognize first of all that you're the chief sinner and you do plenty of things wrong and admit that, but seek your pastor's help in knowing how to speak to that person, and don't feel like worship and music is something that just we do and that's a separate portion and the rest of their life is somewhere else. Do seek your pastor's help in knowing how to address some of those situations that may be on your team. Point C, work hard on your communication between the tech team and the worship team. Your systems, the way that you do things, probably are going to change. You may not be doing things now like you did them 5 years ago. You may be in a church where things are pretty the same every week, or you may be in a church where you tend to change things up a lot. But I just encourage you to really work on building that relationship and communication between each other so that you're able to continually dialogue and say, what happened at this last meeting? What do we want to do differently? And work on being humble and receptive and talking to each other. Dave and I, it's so much fun working with Dave because a lot of times we'll be in a rehearsal and something isn't going right, and I'm able to go to Dave, and Dave just humbly says, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, let's do that, rather than responding and saying, no, we can't do that. That would just throw everything out. And we have a relationship from knowing each other that we're able to, in those situations, just talk about what's going on. So build biblical fellowship. Plan ahead for your rehearsals and not just for the meeting. And trust God. Trust God for your rehearsals. As you think about your rehearsals, as you're planning for them, what's going on? What's going on in here? Think about those. And if you can come at it with a heart of faith and a heart of trust in God, that's going to affect the members of your team and your Sunday meeting. So now we're going to walk through a rehearsal. We're going to talk about specifics of what does it look like before the rehearsal, getting ready for the rehearsal, in it, and then afterwards. So first, before the rehearsal, musical preparation for the rehearsal. Think about your musicians. At what skill level do the musicians that are playing this week play? how reasonable are my expectations for this rehearsal? Am I biting off too much, more than I can chew? Am I teaching too many songs? How complex should we make the arrangements? How will we collaborate on ideas? How much will the leader direct the ideas? What are your expectations for that? Have they played this music before? Will everyone be there? Just think about that in advance. Song arrangements. Spend some time thinking about what you want the structure of the songs to be. And if you're not sure and you want things to be very flexible, think about how you're going to train the team in responding to direction in the moment. Think about tempos. What do I want the tempo of the song to be? Think about the feel of the song. Rhythm section instrumentation. Where do I want different instruments to play at different times? Now, you don't have to be, as a leader, you don't have to come up with all this on your own. Maybe your plan is, okay, on these three songs, I know what I want to do. But on this one song, I don't know what to do, but I know I want it to sound like the recording, so I'm going to send it to the other members on my team, have them listen to it maybe before the recording, hopefully send it to them legally through iTunes or something else, and have them ready and do what you can to prepare and lean on the people in your team that really can make that effective. Think about when you want solo instruments. That would be any instrument that's not in rhythm section, like a flute or a violin or whatever. Think about vocal arrangements. What am I going to try to do here? And if you're not doing anything, that's fine. But just think about it. Spontaneous elements. Do we need to practice being spontaneous in a particular part of these songs? The rehearsal itself. How much time will we have? What are the most important things? What are the hardest things? And I encourage you to just work on those first. Don't play the things that are familiar and think we kind of need to ease into this and, you know, everybody feels good after we play this song and then we'll work on something hard. Just dive into the hard stuff. Will I work on anything that's not specifically for this Sunday? Are we going to spend some time in the Word? Are we going to spend some time praying? Are we going to work on a song that we're going to use 2 weeks from now? Think about your meeting execution. Are there any cues or transitions that need to be practiced? Whether musical, projection, or technical. Are there any like non-musical things that you need to practice? Are there any administrative things that the team needs to be aware of? Much easier to give that to the team in advance rather than trying to remember that in the moment. So, Dave, come and take us through technical preparation.
Thanks, Ken. I'm just curious to know how many of you here are serving on a technical team in technical capacity. Great, thank you for being here. Your role in a Sunday, yes, excellent. Your role in the rehearsal time is critical for the music team, and they depend on you. And I'm just so grateful that you're here to learn. And hopefully you'll be able to get some ideas on how to serve them even better. The technical aspects can make the difference between a rehearsal and just a troubleshooting extravaganza. So here are some ideas for how to not spend your whole rehearsal troubleshooting problems. The springboards for good or for successful technical support for a rehearsal are good communication and good information. I want to make a proposal to tech team leaders in particular, but anyone on a tech team. I propose that it's your responsibility to collect the information that you need to know before the service starts in order to be prepared for your musicians to come in. Some musicians have a good deal of technical know-how and experience, but some of them, the sound system is a complete mystery. And so don't be surprised by that. Make sure that you go to your worship leader in particular, ask the type of questions that to answer or ask him questions that will provide the answers that you need to serve them effectively. What you'll find is that when you ask him the same question week after week or month after month, eventually they learn what you need to know and they begin to communicate those things to you faithfully without even asking. But I wouldn't expect that every worship leader or musician knows exactly how and what to communicate with you. So for me, and each church is going to have a different requirements to some degree of what they need to know. But for me, minimally, what I need to know before I go into a rehearsal is what's happening during that service overall and who is in the band. So those are the big things that I'm trying to, usually I'm talking to Ken or someone to find out what is going to happen during this service. So the impact of it, and this is just an example of how I'm still growing in this. Just this very last Sunday, we had a large choir planned. And so we had kind of arranged the stage layout where all the musicians are on stage based on a choir of 40. Well, I didn't follow up with Ken or his assistant, since Ken just had a baby, so he wasn't really around. But I didn't follow up with them to find out, okay, how many choir members really are coming on Sunday? And so when the choir came and there were only half as many people, I realized, oh, wow, we've like put the band like way on the outsides of the stage, and there's this huge, huge gap in between the choir and the band. I could have just been more faithful to follow through on those details. So even though, in a sense, Ken has the responsibility for that, I'm the one who's making decisions based on that information. And so as the one making those decisions, I should take the responsibility to make sure that I'm finding out the correct information. So who's in the band? What is happening that morning? The issue is, though, that just having one person who has the right information is generally not enough. Typically, there are a couple people doing sound, and you have a music team of many people. So you must be able to communicate that information succinctly to teams. And I'm assuming that most of you are working with volunteers, or are volunteers, and are working with volunteers as your technical team. So I found the most effective way to communicate those things is through a standard form of communication. So you're telling volunteers the same thing the same way over and over again. And now this is where I get to be a little bit specific, and hopefully this is helpful for you. But I left my example sheets down here. We have 5 documents that we give our volunteers each and every week. This is to help them set up and prepare for rehearsal and for the service. The first one looks something like this. It's a stage diagram. It's just a view from the top. It has where all the musicians are, and it also has where we're going to put specific monitor speakers and snake boxes and things like that. That helps them to know where to put stuff, even though the musicians are not there yet, to indicate, well, I go here, or I want to be here. The second thing we hand out each week is what is called an input list. Yours need not be this long. This just happens to be, we have 72 channels, so this is one for each. But it basically says by the way, I have copies of all of these. If you're interested in them, you can come get me afterwards. I've got about 30 copies of them. So, but basically this tells my volunteers every microphone and every place to plug them in, so that when they walk in, again, without having the knowledge of the musicians where they're going to be, they can not only put music stands in the right place, but they can start wiring those things up as well. So that's an input list. We have an output list as well, so every musician hopefully has some way to hear himself or herself when they're singing or playing. And so that would be an output from the mixer, the monitor mixer. And this tells our volunteers how to plug those things together so that those are all working when the musicians come in. We also have a couple other things that we use, including a standard form for the actual service, as well as checklists. And I have examples of these. These checklists are helpful reminders so the volunteers don't forget the little things that are easy to forget when you only do things once a month. So depending on your situation, you may or may not need like 8 pages of stuff to hand out to people every time. But what I have found is that when you communicate this, when you're using the same information or the same types of information each week, when you communicate it in the same form at the same time, It's that makes it very easy for volunteers to get to bring it or to think about it and to know how to execute it on an ongoing way. So that is preparation. Once you have everything planned, then the time comes where rehearsal almost starts. It's actually time to set up the stage. One of the most joy-making, peace-bringing, worship-preparing things for a sound team is actually having everything set up prior to the musicians arriving. So I would encourage those of you that do sound to make every effort to be completely set up when the musicians arrive, because that will serve your own soul as well as serve the musicians. However, this requires several things. It requires time to get everything in place and plugged in. It requires the space to do that efficiently, meaning that not only do you need the room, but you need to not have other things in the way, not have other people kind of going through the same area. You need to have expertise on the team, and again, you need to have accurate information about the band. So I want to speak briefly to musicians. I want to dispel a popular myth. Okay, and many musicians think, I believe, and I'm sure this is not every single one of you, but that if I want to have a longer rehearsal, I should show up earlier. So if at the last day, or on that day, I feel like, you know what, I really could use an extra 15 minutes of rehearsal, maybe I should show up 15 minutes earlier. That's not always the case. That's a little counterintuitive, because if you come and are expecting to rehearse and the sound team hasn't had the complete time to get set up for you, chances are you're going to want to begin to rehearse, and the sound team is then going to be delayed in actually getting you to the point where you get to rehearse. Does that make sense? So if not, here's an exception, obviously. If you communicate to your sound crew that day, and they say, sure, we'll come in 15 minutes earlier too, so that we can be ready for you, that's great. But again, then that communication is essential. Related to having time and space for setup, the tech team also needs time to troubleshoot anything and everything that isn't working correctly. For our teams, I have a goal that we fix and test everything before the musicians arrive. Again, we check every input, every output. One of the most, you know, debilitating moments, I guess, in a sound check is when something just isn't plain working. It means that at least one musician can't really participate in the sound check or the rehearsal, and it really can be problematic if that's the worship leader's stuff. So pay particular attention to that. And also try and obviously, you know, certain things come up and equipment breaks and you can't necessarily solve every single problem every single time. But if you set that as a goal, I think you're going to find that it's reachable most of the time, and that it will lead to peaceful rehearsal time when that comes up. Lastly, and in some ways, this I maybe should have said this first. Prepare the tech team for what to expect in the rehearsal and, if possible, in the entire service, similar to what Ken was saying. If you have a knowledge of what's going to happen in that rehearsal, you know what songs are coming up, you know of specific musicians who are new, have never played before, make sure to communicate that to the sound crew, because that's going to affect their ability to serve those musicians. So someone who's never, you know, used a floor monitor before with a vocal mic needs to learn some things about doing that, and the sound crew can take the initiative to train them and to serve them so that they can be more effective. Now that you've planned and you've got everything set up and it's all working perfectly, right? It's time for the rehearsal to start, isn't it? Well, I would say not so fast. Now it's time for sound check. And one of the things that Ken and I have found to be very important to differentiate is to differentiate between rehearsal and sound check. because they have two different goals, and those goals can tend to be conflicting. So, and we'll get into that a little bit. So everyone shows up, everything is set up. Someone needs to start sound check. Who starts sound check? We've found that it's been most helpful for actually someone on the sound crew to initiate this. We're going to start now with sound check. And maybe that means going to the worship leader and saying, you know, we're ready for you now. Do you want to gather everybody and begin sound check? Maybe the worship leader will pray at that point. Sometimes we found that we just, as soon as a musician comes in, if their stuff is ready to go, we begin to work with them. So in either case, I think it's helpful for the sound crew to take leadership at that point in time to really say, okay, we said we were going to start at 6:30. Well, not 6:30 in the morning. We do 6:30 evenings. That's why I thought that. But we know we said we're going to start this morning. We're going to start rehearsal at 7:30. So the sound crew should be ready to begin to communicate with the worship team at 7:30. Okay, we're going to get started now. Four steps for a effective sound check. This will probably not be news to the tech folks, but hopefully it'll be instructive to everyone and to the musicians as well, because I think sometimes musicians just don't know all the steps that it takes in order to get through an effective sound check, and that's okay. But if the sound crew can help them understand, and that's great, and that's my goal. So we have four steps. One is set initial gains. Basically, for non-techies, the soundboard has two volume controls on it. One, and this, you know, for you techies, you know, this is probably not exactly accurate, but two volume controls. One determines how much it sucks in from your microphone into the soundboard, and then the other volume control determines how much you push out back to you so you can hear yourself sing. So the first thing we need to do in order to get the system to work correctly is to determine how much sound we're going to bring into the soundboard. That's called setting the gain on the soundboard. So that must be done first before you do anything else at the board, and it requires that a musician play at essentially their loudest level just for long enough for the person to make that adjustment. Second thing that needs to happen is we need to make sure that each musician can hear him or herself and the worship leader enough to play something. So that will mean taking the time to go and look at or talk to or communicate with each musician to say, can you hear your voice? Can you hear your instrument, whether it's in your headphones or your monitor? Second thing is to set front of house levels, that's just the audience levels, as everyone plays. So once each musician can hear themselves enough to play, then they should all play, and whoever's at the main board is going to set those levels to an initial setting. And then finally, set monitor levels as everyone plays. So everyone plays, and then we finalize in detail how much do you need of each of the other instruments in it. Now, these are four steps, but they're not necessarily need to be done in exactly that order. Some of them can be accomplished simultaneously depending on your setup. So if you run the main or run the sound for the congregation, the house board, and the monitors from the same location, but you don't use a personal monitoring system, you have to do them in that order, A, then B, then C, then D. And they should each be done independently. Now, I said have to. Let me rephrase that. You don't necessarily have to get the sound for the audience or the congregation done first, but it's helpful, especially if you have floor monitors, for the musicians to be, if they're going to hear stuff coming back from the house, it's helpful for them to hear that before they start turning things up in their floor monitors. So for musicians, you can think, like, what's taking them so long to get around to my monitors? It may be that they're trying to make sure that the house is at least in a beginning place so that if you're going to hear anything from the house, you have that before you start turning things up in your monitors. If you run your house sound and your monitors from separate boards, You need to do A and then B, and then you can do C and D together. Once you have gain set, the two boards become independent of each other. And if you have a personal monitoring system, how many of you have those little gadgets? Yeah, how many of you love them? Great, that's almost everybody. I've heard that they're wonderful. We don't use them here yet. Maybe someday we will. But once you get gain set, then essentially it's everything's in the control of the musician, so you can just do all the rest of it all at one time. Here's a little. I want to say, well, I'm going to take a step back and just note the nice little phrase in steps C and D. It's the phrase, everyone plays. This is the primary reason why sound check and rehearsal are not particularly compatible. To do an effective sound check, we need everyone to play so that everyone else can hear whether they can hear that person or not. If the worship leader is trying to work on arrangements and is saying, okay, you know, flute player, you don't play except on the last phrase of verse 4 of this song, then chances are that no one's going to know if the flute is actually in their mix or not, except for that one brief moment. So if you decide, or if you can, it's important that all the musicians play all the time. It's somewhat of a cacophony sometimes, and it's actually bad musicianship, but it's good for sound check. And it will make your sound check go fast so that you can rehearse. And that's the goal, is if you all play, you get the monitor set quickly, and then you'll be able to actually move into rehearsal. So everyone's monitor mix is set. Oh, did you have a question?
You're supposed to set the levels of each person individually, like, before everyone plays, right?
Yes. So you want to make sure that each gain is set on the board and that each person can hear themselves at least. And then you ask everyone to play. They may be playing out of tune. They may be playing out of rhythm. If their mix is absolutely terrible or zero, they might not be playing very well. But at least as you move through the different musicians at that point, as they're all playing, they'll be able to know whether they can hear each other or not. Okay? So then it's on to rehearsal. And so I would again propose that it is important for a sound crew member to go to the worship team leader and say, we're done. I think sometimes we have failed where we've finished sound check and the band's playing and they're having fun and all, but they've missed 10 minutes of rehearsal because we didn't actually tell them we were done. So go and tell them, we're done doing sound check now, and you can go ahead and rehearse, which is what Ken's going to tell you about.
So musically, for the worship team, during that sound check, what we do is just have everybody playing all the time. And as Dave said, it is cacophony because I'm not always intending all these instruments to play together at the same time. We'll normally pick a song that everybody's familiar with, and I try not to do something that, you know, we're teaching a new song and everybody's trying to figure it out at the same time. We'll do something everybody knows, we just keep playing it, and we just keep playing it till they say stop. During this time, there's really a transition of leadership. So a lot of times during the rehearsal, the worship leader will be really leading it. But during this time, depending on who the person is that's leading the sound check, a lot of times we'll have a person, with the way that our system works, we'll have a person who has a microphone who's standing on the stage, and they're communicating to the person at the monitor board, and they're saying, okay, this person needs more of this, this person needs less of this. This isn't the case if you're using the personal monitoring system. But for us, we have everybody play, and then that person is making those contacts. So my role as the worship leader in that moment is to be very clear about what's going on at each of those moments. Because the person that often for us is holding that microphone is a volunteer on the sound team who may be a 14-year-old girl who doesn't feel in a good way, the, you know, okay, I'm going to tell everybody you need to stop playing, you need to start playing, that kind of thing. So my job as the worship leader is to really know where we're at in the process and make sure that everything's moving along. Because the more quickly things move along, the better it serves the sound team, etc. So I'm asking, okay, have we gotten all the inputs? And then once they say yes, then I tell the worship team, okay, now we've gotten all the inputs. Can you all hear me? They say yes. Then once they can all hear me, can you all hear yourselves? Yes, we can hear ourselves. Okay, now we're all going to play together, and now we're going to start the sound check. Then we just keep vamping on the song. Then once that's during that time, then the person with the microphone is going around. They're making sure that each person can hear what they need. And they don't have to get it perfect, but they need what they to get in order to do a decent rehearsal. Then once that's done, then that person and I communicate. We say, okay, we're done with sound check. We're going to rehearse. And then at that point, that person who's helping is just doing any things that need to be fixed up monitoring-wise. Yes, question.
You say, can you hear me as a worship leader? Are you saying just the vocals or the instrument that you're...
The question is asking for the worship leader, the worship leader asking the team, can you hear me? Is it just the vocal or is it the vocal and the instrument? Usually we aim for both. Because sometimes I'll give verbal cues or sometimes I'll just play really loud and they'll know to go back to the chorus. So whatever helps you most, but we do try to do both. Comments. And then during that time, just exercise patience and know that it's going to serve you best if you do the sound check well. Musical recommendations for rehearsal. Do what you can to cut down the things that you need to do. Don't go through the whole song, but practice transition moments if it's a song that you know. Practice the moments where leadership is going to be needed. Practice the start of a song. Practice the turns or the interludes, the musical sections between, like after a chorus or when it's just the band playing. Practice the end of a chorus. Does the band know where to go? Do they know what volume level to play? Do they know when that big crash happens? Do they know those moments? Whatever the moments are potentially awkward or there's going to be questions from the team, just go for those right away. And or transitions from one song to another. Bite off the hardest things first. Work on those transitions. Establish the groove. Establish the feel. Do we want the snare to be hitting on four? Do we want it to be hitting on the and of three? Should that guitar feel be like it is, or should it be twice as fast? Should it be double time in terms of strumming? Just establish the groove. Don't feel like you have to go through... Once you establish that you have to go through the whole song and work out everything in it, just get the groove, and as long as they know how it's, for a rhythm section, how it's supposed to feel, where those accents are happening, and they know what to happen at those transitions, you have the most important things done. So really aim for those first. Give the team simple arrangement instructions. If you have a clear idea of what's going to be, what you want out of that rehearsal and what you want it to sound like Dave said, you want the flute player to play on on verse four, or you don't want somebody to play another section, just have the whole team, okay, here's your sheet. Here, let me tell you in 30 seconds how I want this arrangement to go. You play in this verse. You don't play in this verse. I want just synth here. This is going to be a cappella. Just tell them. And a lot of times you can do it, to accentuate the text, and it does a wonderful job. A lot of times also, just simply changing up the texture and using variety, even if you can't say, well, that verse is about, God's grace, and the next one's about His mercy, and I don't know what instrumentation would best fit here. Even if there's not anything perfect musically to say about it, just change it up, make it different. And that variety, anytime you hear something different musically, it affects you in a different way. It makes you, even if you've been singing the same thing, it changes it up. So don't be afraid to just make some decisions real quick. Say, this is what we're going to do. And if it doesn't work, you can change it. But it moves things along much more quickly. Number four, practice what you're bad at. And I don't remember where this comes from, I know there's a story of a jazz musician. The quote is, if you want to be a good musician, practice what you're good at. If you want to be a great musician, practice what you're bad at. And you want to do that as teams. So it's fun to play the songs you all know and love, but practice what you're bad at. There's a story of a trumpet player who always was in the practice room, and he was like a world-renowned trumpet player. People would walk past his practice room, and they'd be like, "What is going on in there?" And it sounded like so awful. And, you know, he's just fracking all these notes as a trumpet player. That means you're just not hitting the note at all. And they couldn't figure out. Well, all he was doing was practicing the certain techniques that he just couldn't get. And then when he played in front of others, he played wonderfully. So practice the hard things. And do the most important things first. And now Dave's going to take us to technical stuff during the rehearsal.
So rehearsal time is when the sound team basically shifts from working on the monitors for the musicians, although they will continue to do that, to working on what the congregation is going to hear. And I would propose that rehearsal, not the first song of the service, is the time to get the best possible mix. Now, while a band will normally play and rehearse songs, and getting a decent mix on each song is often happens naturally, there are a few things that it does require. And what it will mean is that if you're going to get a good mix for each song, or at least each feel, the band needs to play for a few minutes on a particular song. If the worship leader is a very efficient rehearser, as Ken was saying, you may actually need to ask him to go back and play a longer chunk of a song. If all he does is the intro and the outro and it takes 30 seconds to set the arrangement and everyone gets it, you're not necessarily going to have the time you need to get a good idea of what that mix should sound like. So it may require that, but typically not. Typically, you're going to be able to work on mixes. I would also propose that this is the time to get details on arrangements so that you can mix actively. The purpose of the person mixing at the soundboard should be to accurately transfer the arrangement details from the band to the congregation. The worship leader and their team are working hard to pick good times for different instruments to play. And it's our job as a sound team to work hard to make sure that we are highlighting and serving that work. I would say take notes. If you're a mixer, take notes on the words of the song, if you have the song sheet, or just even under a little, this song name. Take notes. Verse 1 is an electric guitar-driven time. Verse 2 is a cappella, because you'll need to make some adjustments in the mix in order to support that. So please take the time to do that. Pay attention during rehearsal. Like, you may get to the point where you feel like, oh, well, that instrument sounds good and that instrument sounds good. And generally, it sounds good. But you should go one step further and pay attention to what they're doing on stage so that you can make notes and actively mix to serve the band's arrangements. Just a note to worship leaders, this process is served when you speak arrangement details into the microphone. So if you're a guitar player in particular, you may turn to your band and say something to them. And the sound team is not going to follow that. So if you just turned around and told your electric guitar player to play on verse 3, probably the sound person is not going to follow that. It doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to hear the electric guitar, but it would serve them if you actually communicate that to the team through the mic so the sound crew can hear it. Well, you've got good arrangements. You've rehearsed transitions. The mix is good. Rehearsal's over, right? Well, I would say that it's almost true, but not totally true. What song did you rehearse last? That's what the first song in the service is going to sound like. So let's say you're going through and you have some up songs in the beginning and some slower songs at the end of your set. You rehearse them in order. And so the last song that you've rehearsed and the last song that the mixer has set levels on is a slow song. The first song out of the gate is an up song. that up song isn't necessarily going to sound like a slow song, but it's going to be mixed like a slow song. So when rehearsal is over, do one more quick thing and go back to the beginning and play the first few minutes of the first song so that the mixer can set those levels back to the way that he had them when that was what you were rehearsing. Now, a few little details for after the rehearsal, but before the meeting starts. The tech team typically isn't only dealing with the musicians, although that is a very large part of what we do. But sometimes there are other things happening as well, videos that need to have audio tested, other microphones, dramas, things like that. And it's important that there is clear planning and communication for when that type of thing is going to happen. So there may need to be a very strict time when the rehearsal ends so that those other elements can be rehearsed. And there are other things that can be done as well, like clean up the stage and get coffee cups and whatnot back into the trash. And so I would propose, if possible, to end rehearsal at a certain time before the service actually starts. We typically aim for 30 minutes before, and that gives us some flex time so that we're not like the worship leader isn't planning to rehearse up until 5 minutes before, and then we realize that we need to test a 7-minute video and that we're not going to be able to do that. So plan to end as well. And Ken's going to wrap us up.
Just one additional thought on rehearsal. Recently, we found it very helpful for us at Covenant Life that if there's a musician that does have a good ear that is not playing on that Sunday, whether it be if you have multiple people who are leading on at your church, or just a musician who has a good ear, just to have them in the auditorium during the rehearsal, especially toward the end. A lot of times, sound people can come from more of a, you know, an ear orientation or from a technical orientation, and they do need both. But just have somebody, if you can, on occasion, who's just out there hearing the rehearsal and not just giving comments after the meeting about how everything went. And then just one other comment, as worship leaders, and you could hear this in what we were saying, Dave is very proactive in gathering all the information from me and seeing here's what's going on. And I don't always know what information to give Dave, and I need to grow in always being proactive about always giving him that information. So, you know, just in your particular context, whether it's, you know, you're the one who's in charge of the worship team and you oversee the sound team, think through what does that relationship look like, who's giving the information, who's really looking for the information, and plan how that relationship is going to work. And thank you, Dave, for making it so easy for me here. So final thoughts, communication, relationships are critical in the way that that we work together. Musicians can overcome typical temptations to serve the technical team. Musicians can be on time. Musicians can exercise self-control and not play when the sound team doesn't want them to play. They can exercise patience. They can be gracious. They don't have to be quote-unquote musicians. They're normal people and can exercise self-control. How technical teams can overcome typical temptations to serve musicians. Tech team folks could not be anxious about not everything coming together and communicating worry about, oh no, we don't have all of these things perfectly. They can do it by understanding what the musicians are aiming to do, by being responsive and accentuating what the musicians are trying to do on stage through the mix. Tech team folks can be on time and have things prepared. Tech team folks and musicians can do it by being can serve others by being responsive, by not being defensive. There are going to be a lot of things you need to change in the rehearsal, in the moment, and it's going to be a judgment call. It's about something musical. It's not about the written word of God, and you can say that's heresy or not. You're saying, does this sound good? Does this not sound good? And you need to decide, and you need to work together. So humility makes all the difference in these relationships. And then just a reminder about the true goal of rehearsal, worship in spirit and truth. We're seeking to be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing, making melody to the Lord with all our hearts in rehearsal and in the meeting. So that's our desire. So Dave, why don't you come up, and we're just going to take questions now about anything that we've talked about so far.
How long are your Sunday morning rehearsals? How long does all this take for you guys?
Yeah, Sunday morning rehearsals, we actually do our rehearsals now on Saturday nights rather than Sunday mornings. On Saturday night, because we do two meetings on a Sunday morning, there's limited time on the morning. So we start, the technical team comes at 4:30 on Saturday afternoon, and they set up from 4:30 to 6:30. The worship team comes at 6:30 and rehearses till 8:30. And then we go home, we come in the morning, and we typically could come in around 7:45, make sure everything's working well, go till 8:30, break, and then the first service starts at 9. So that's our typical routine. It's going to look different for everybody.
So,
yes?
Just to follow up on that, so your Sunday morning time is more just a sound check, not rehearsal. How does Saturday night and Sunday morning differentiate?
What we do on Saturday night is what we've discussed here. So all the sound check happens first and then rehearsal. Typically what happens is on a Sunday morning, we leave time for any changes that we might want to make in arrangements, any last minute things that need to be followed up on, make sure that the guitarist, when he went home and came back with his electric guitar, it's still at the same level. You know, those types of things. I think that'd be it. Would you add anything else, Dave? Okay.
Is that in addition to a midweek practice then, or is it you just do the Saturday night and Sunday?
Right now, we're just doing the Saturday night and the Sunday morning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is for Dave. Do you have similar ensembles playing repeatedly, you know, instrumentation and whatnot? Are you able to save any sort of baseline sound-wise as a starting point for your sound check, or do you kind of start from scratch every time?
The question was if we have similar arrangements and musicians from 1 week to the next, can we save sort of a baseline settings for all these things? I think the answer to that is a very qualified yes. We almost never have the same setup from week to week, so I would not be able to answer that from experience currently. I've seen it done in the past, but my experience has been this, that a person who's actively mixing and thinking about how to serve both the musicians and the congregation are going to be able to do just a much more effective job. So it's very difficult to say the bass guitar or the piano should always look like this. I think it's fair sometimes to have a starting place where the knobs are in certain places, but as I think it gets dangerous when people rely on that as this is the way it's going to be, because different instruments sound different, different players play different patches of the synth sound different, or what have you. So I'd say that yes, that's a possibility, but that it's not possible to replace a person who's carefully listening and doing the hard work of making it sound great.
Scott?
On those documents that you distribute each week, who's the principal generator of those documents? Is it one person generating all five, or do different people generate different pieces of that packet?
Yeah, so the question was, who makes the paperwork that I showed you? It's either me or someone that I work with. His name's Ben. So one of us puts those together, and typically I approve those, and Ken will see some of those as well ahead of time. The checklists, we use the same ones every week, so that's not something we create new every week. But the other things we do create every week.
Yes. I have a very quick question. You mentioned that one of the things you like to do is to fix and work with inputs. Commonly, our guitarists bring their instruments to rehearsal. So often something will go wrong with one of the two, and we'll spend the majority of the sound time fixing the input or fixing the level. How do you set up in the absence of an instrument?
Excellent question. There is a wonderful little tool which I'd recommend. It's made by a company called Whirlwind. It is called a Q box, and it's that's the letter Q box, and it has a quarter inch jack on it, and it makes a tone. It just goes boo. So we take that thing up and we plug in the guitarist's cable into it so that we can make sure that all of the chain works all the way through to the soundboard, and all we hear is the boo. But we at least know that all the cables work and it's all plugged in correctly.
In the back, standing up.
When you're laying out like your auditorium or your stage layout, do you also coordinate your what I would call your decorative set up there, too, your panels and all of that?
So the question is, when I lay out the stage, am I also dealing with the decorations, the sets, set design pieces, and so on? I have help on that. I'm not very aesthetically keen that way, but yes, I'm defining when I come to make the drawing. I define on there where the stuff goes, and that's generally been approved by Julie Coughlin, Bob's wife, who helps me try and make things as nice looking as possible.
So the tech team actually is responsible for the acoustics of the stage. Is that
for the setup of the stage?
Yeah.
Here. Your setup. What works best as far as what position should be paid versus volunteers to make sure you have the right people there Sunday?
Yeah. Question is paid players versus volunteers. We actually use everybody as volunteers. So we've just made that commitment, and really, I think, you know, there are different views on it, but as far as we've been able to do things, we're really more concerned about people, you know, being members of the church and being committed to the local church than we are about the overall sound that we have. And so we've just made that commitment, and everybody's a volunteer here. Yep. Yeah.
Regarding the stage diagram, are you aware of any program that gives you a template where you can just manipulate it by computer and put, you know, as opposed to drawing one out every week?
Yeah. It's a great question. The question was to make a stage diagram, what software options are there so you don't have to, like, hand draw it or, you know, draw lines in a Word document. I use something called Visio. It's made by Microsoft. It's an extension of the Office suite. It's a little bit pricey. You can do something similar for, you know, in the normal Office suite using PowerPoint even, because you can create a slide with all your different components on it and then just copy them to the next one where you do your stage diagram.
There's an open source version of Visio called Dia.
There is an open source version of Visio called Dia.
Yeah.
So that might be a good option.
We set up every Sunday for our meetings at a school.
Mm-hmm.
So we come in at 9 and we have to set up all the equipment and do the rehearsal many times at the same time. We lost a couple of guys who were very proficient on sound, so we have new people lately trying to learn, and they're great guys who are serving humbly, and yet they're not technically proficient yet. At what point do you decide that a sound check that is not going that well needs to transition into rehearsal, because it's the only time you have?
That's a good question. Do you want to address any part of that, or should I do it?
You can go. I think that would be a decision for the worship leader.
Claudio asked the question. He said, you guys are in a different universe. We rent our school, and we need to get everything ready. What do we do? I think if the sound check is just going so long and you only have a certain amount of time to rehearse, there are times definitely when I make the decision and I just say, okay, we need to work on this, and so we just move into rehearsal. And so we recognize this is not ideal, but this is something that, as far as I can tell, this is one of the, this is more important than having that thing for the Sunday meeting. So once you do that, just make sure you just communicate that to people and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And it's not going to hurt you. I mean, this is the way that most churches do things all the time anyway. So, I mean, you can definitely do that. But then one other idea would be just in terms of the training, just pursuing other opportunities for the training for those volunteers. That'll make a difference. But I know that's another road to follow. But definitely, yeah, do try to establish things as much as you can, but don't feel like you're breaking rules if you switch over. Another hand over here, yeah.
Under the song arrangements, you mentioned trying to do things more spontaneously. Could you give some examples of how you communicate that to the team?
Yeah, question is, how do we do things spontaneously on the team? In terms of, it may be where we have a section where we'll allow people to sing anything they want, just respond to a text or respond to what we've been singing, and we'll take a few chords and we'll just vamp on that. Another thing that just plays into that is just having signals for each other. So generally, we'll tell the band that a kind of a general format of what we're planning to do with the song, but we don't know for certain everything that we're going to do, so we use plenty of hand signals for chorus and for verse and for bridge and signals like that. And a lot of times during rehearsal, this is one other thing that I've found helpful in rehearsal, we can often communicate differently in rehearsal than we would on a Sunday morning. So in rehearsal, we have the freedom to say, go to the bridge, but we don't have the freedom to do that in the Sunday meeting. So I try to make use of those rehearsal times and give signals. And I find out that the drummer's not watching, and then we learn that in rehearsal rather than learning that in the Sunday meeting. So I try to do that as much as possible. Yeah. We've got time for one more question in the back.
Knowing that having your musicians prepared for rehearsal means having a list prepared in advance, perhaps before they get there, so they know, when do you typically prepare a song list for you?
Yeah. The question is, when do you prepare the song list for Sunday, and how do you communicate that to your musicians? We've changed it up. Things are always changing, but what we're doing right now is we have a meeting on Tuesdays where we recap what we did the previous Sunday, and we say, okay, this is our plan for the coming Sunday. So generally by Tuesday, I either have, okay, these are the songs we're going to do, or I have, our pastor would not like to do some of those songs that we just talked about, and I need to revise things, but I have a general course of what we're doing. And then I'll communicate to the team. Recently, we've been using software from planningcenteronline.com. I found it really helpful. And through that, I can have people scheduled for a particular Sunday. I click a button and send an email to them and say, these are the songs. And then it's dependent on the member's skill level. So sometimes I'll send an email and say, okay, guitarist and drummer, I need you to listen to this track before rehearsal. But I may not send that to the others because they already know what they need to do or may be able to pick it up or that kind of thing. So thank you all for being here. It's been a joy to be with you. And pray the Lord blesses you and your churches.
You've been listening to a seminar by Dave Wilcox and Ken Bohr, which was given at our Worship God 2008 conference. It has been made available to you through Sovereign Grace Ministries. Sovereign Grace is primarily devoted to planting and caring for churches. We also hold conferences, train leaders, and publish books, music, and audio and video messages. For more information, visit www.sovereigngraceministries.org or call us at 301-330-7400.